Hey everybody, welcome to Michelle is Money Hungry. I have a couple of things I want to share with you before we get into the episode. Today I'm sharing a recording that I did with Candace Marie from Young Yet Wise and the Young Yet Wise Society. I love this conversation and I was struck by how East Coast people are not loose-lipped. It's hilarious. And it was really funny because we were talking before the recording. She's just like, blah, 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 blah. We start recording and I'm like, I'm going to have to badger this girl. So it is a really good, it's a really inspiring episode. It gives you a lot of ideas of what you can do if you're paying down your debt. She's also amazing. So if you are looking for any kind of graphic help, or you'd like to participate in Candace's monthly program to kind of help you get focused on your personal finances, please do that. I highly recommend it. Also, I am writing a book. Super excited about it. The name is hilarious, but I wanted to talk a little bit about it. So I'm releasing a book. It's called Unsexy, A Savage AF Money Story. You know what AF means. And basically, it is an emotional conversation about money and just how I feel about the different things that have gone on financially. And instead of that kind of, this is how you budget, this is how interest works, this is blah, 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 those books are already out there. And I felt like there was room for a personal finance book that dealt with emotion and money. I've also reached out to a lot of the ladies in the personal finance space that I'm in FinCon, and I'm looking to also include some of their observations as well throughout the course of the book. It looks like it should be released the first or second week of June, so I'm hustling on it, and I really hope that you will enjoy this financial conversation. Also, if you're in the city of Denver on June 9th, Jason Vitug from Frugal, Phroogal, from Frugal will be bringing his Financial Road to Wellness tour into Denver. And myself, Mindy Jensen from 1500 Days and Bigger Pockets podcast, as well as John and David from the Debt Free Guys will be speaking at that event. So if you are in Denver, we would love to see you there. It is a brunch, so there is a small cost to that, but I will include a link to that in the show notes as well. I hope you enjoy the episode. Is Money Hungry. I am so excited to have the following guest on the show today. We've been talking about slashing, slaying, kicking large amounts of debt to the curb. This young lady did it. The other day we spoke with Dr. Jen, who eradicated $1.2 million in debt. Yeah, you heard that right. Yeah, I'm still kind of tripped out by the whole thing. And today we're talking to Candace Marie from Young Yet Wise. She is phenomenal. She creates the best videos. So honestly, I keep bugging her to start some video course or something because I feel like no one's done it yet. And she's just the nicest person, so energetic, so bubbly. And I thought that I would reach out to her and talk to her about how she went about paying off $38,000 worth of debt, some of the lessons she learned, some of the things that worked, didn't work, and the process that she went through. It took about 7 years, but really, 2 years were just applied like intensity. 5 years were kind of status quo. So with that being said, welcome, Candace.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for having me.
Everyone, I felt so bad. I've been picking at her so that we could have like fabulous audio today. So she gets on the line. I'm like, okay, I can hear this. I can hear that. I think we're good. And she's probably like, what is wrong with her? But
I'm like trying not to move right now.
I've told her to sit like a statue. I also am sitting like a statue because I move around too much. So Candace, for the listeners who aren't familiar with you, could you share a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So as you guys know, my name is Candace Marie and I have a personal finance blog called youngyetwise.com where I help people make wiser money choices. And I started my blog because I wanted to kind of document my own money journey and also teach other people what mistakes or not to do and how they can learn from others. So I have a blog, I do one-on-one money coaching, and I also have a monthly paid membership.
She also does really cool videos, I'm just saying.
Oh yeah, and I do design work as well and cool videos.
And I think what I'd like to do is just dive right in and just talk about how you incurred the debt or debts, what you thought about it in the beginning, and just kind of the process that went behind living with debt and then deciding to just one day be like, you know what, the status quo isn't working, let's slash it.
Oh yeah, sure. So I graduated college in 2011 with $38,500 worth of debt. And you know what, before I went to college, I wasn't really thinking of it being a big deal. I'm like, you know what, I'm just signing paperwork. Like, yes, I'll just pay it off. Just throw it on my credit card, you know, like I didn't have a concept of money until I graduated. I'm like, wait, I have to pay all this back? It's really hard for me to find a job. So by the time, like, I found a job like after 6 months of graduating, but I was making like $30,000 a year with like no benefits. And then I ended up losing that job. So then I had to like be freelancing. So it's definitely a long journey. I ended up incurring credit card debt as well during that time.
So I'm wondering, did you, because I know that you lost a job about a year ago. Is that the same job that you're, so did you work that job for a while and that was the job after college and then that was the job that kind of disappeared or?
No, that was the second job. So the job that I just lost a year ago, or I like to say that they lost me.
They lost you. They totally lost you.
That was my second job.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to peel back some more layers because with these interviews, I really want to kind of get kind of deep into it. So you graduate, like most graduates, you start looking for a job. It takes 6 months to get the job. You get a job. You're like, okay, it's $30,000. I'm going to make it work. What happened with credit card debt? How did that even occur?
Well, because I did have an emergency fund. It was a very small emergency fund. So I still had to put things on my credit card just to live. And while I was trying to find clients to do freelance work. So that's kind of where the credit card debt came into play. Luckily I moved back home. So that's moving back home is a big part of this story here.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to keep picking here because I'm still not getting the timing. How many years were you in that job? That first one?
The first job I was at for about like 6 months.
Oh, and then they were like, bye, Felicia?
Yeah, because
that really sucks.
Yeah, it was a really small company. Okay. So they didn't have enough money to hire two designers.
So did they hire you and then they decided to hire somebody else and let you go?
So it was a senior designer and then I was the junior designer.
Oh, okay. Got it. Everyone's like, Michelle, why are you? There's a reason and rationale behind all this because the time and the flow on what you did, I think for a lot of people will be really important to know. So then you lose this job. You're like, crap. Did you immediately move back home?
No, I had already moved back home after college because I couldn't find a job.
Okay. And so you were at home when you got this new job.
Yeah.
We're working it, lost that job, but we're still living at home.
Yes.
Okay, cool. All right. So that's clear to everyone. Candace graduated, moved back home. Job search was a pain in the butt, like everyone knows it can be. Gets a job, loses it in 6 months. Fortunately, she's still back home. Let's talk about how it was living back home and just kind of mentally how you were feeling and how you decided to start freelancing that first time.
So I kind of didn't feel like college really prepared me for the real world. It was just like, I just kept having flashbacks from my graduation thinking that everything was going to be wonderful.
<You know>? Like the movies?
Yeah, like the movies. And then I'm like, wait, what am I supposed to do now with my life?
Oh my God.
Lost this job. And then I had to like pause my student loans. I had to put them on deferment because I couldn't afford to pay them. And so just moving back home is different because when you're in college, you're like on your own. You don't really have any rules to follow. You're just coming in and out as you please. Then you get back home and it's like, oh, well, where are you going? What time you'll be back? And
oh, God.
So that was different.
Sorry.
But I still had to pay rent. It was just a small amount. It wasn't like Boston rent prices, but I still did have to help out with rent. So.
And what was the conversation like? One of the things I'm wondering about is what was your financial background? Like, I know that when I went to college, I had no idea what the hell I was doing other than studying. Like, I knew how to study. I got that right. But I didn't have a personal finance background. Like, I didn't have conversations with my mom about money beyond, we don't have a lot of money and I'm working hard all the time. Like, that's literally the conversation that I had. And that's not a fault of my mom. It's just that was the conversation she had with her parents. And so I'm always interested in hearing, what was your personal finance background and how did that affect the money decisions you were making both in college and then directly after?
I also feel like we weren't really having money conversations. My mom is just super frugal, so she likes to save money. That's all I knew.
That's a good habit.
It's just like, don't spend all you have. But I started reading a lot of personal finance books while I was in college. So that's kind of where I started to fall in love with personal finances and my money.
Why did you decide to, like, what was compelling you to read these books? Like, was there a feeling of pain or were you stressed about something or were you just interested? Like, why did you decide to start diving into personal finance?
I feel like I was just interested. Like, one day, the first book that I started reading was called A Millionaire by 30. And it was just about this man who ended up becoming a millionaire by the time he was 30. And I felt like that was really inspiring to me. I was just like, wow. And every month chapter, he was documenting like what his net worth was and like how much money he was making and bringing in. And like, it was cool just be able to see his money growing. So I was like, I want my money to grow.
Did you have conversations with other people around you about money?
No, not really. I wasn't really having conversations with people around me about money until kind of like my senior year. And my blog kind of morphed out of this because I did a project where I was going around interviewing people and asking them what's one thing they wish they knew when they were 18. And a lot of people kept bringing up the subject of money.
Oh, okay. And when did you start blogging? Was it directly after you graduated or still while you were in school?
No, it was after I got my second job. So I want to say I started blogging like 2013, 2014, maybe. Yeah, like 2013, 2014.
And why did you even, I understand that you did this project and you're like, oh, like maybe I should do a blog. But what was the purpose for you to do the blog? Like were there certain people that you were trying to serve? Or did you just feel like I have all these thoughts in my brain and I might as well just put it somewhere?
Yeah, I just felt like I wanted people to learn from other people's mistakes. So when I did the project, I kept reading about people like saying, I wish I didn't spend as much money. I wish I would have saved more. I wish I would have put more towards retirement. So the blog kind of drafted out that kind of idea of helping people make wiser choices while they're young. So when they're older, they can be in a better position.
You find a second job. So okay, moving forward. And how was it going from freelance to finding that second job? And how long did you work that one?
So I was definitely thankful to have the second job. Consistent income. Yes. So I was there for almost like 4.5 years. So at the second job. Yeah.
And then that job was lost as well. I agree with you. They lost out on you. What was your money like by the time that happened? Like, what was going on with you where you're like, you know, I've been kind of paying on this debt and it's time to let it go.
So when I was still working there, even though they let me go, I was kind of already planning an exit strategy because I was like, I don't really want to be here anymore. Maybe I should try this entrepreneur thing. So I was kind of saving up money into my emergency fund. And I was also trying to put as much money towards my debt as possible because I was like, well, if I'm going to be an entrepreneur, then it's better to have one less bill to worry about. So I wanted to become debt-free so that I could really be able to pursue my dreams without having to worry about this debt holding me back.
What did that look like in terms of the payments? So you're working there for 4 years. So was it like at the beginning of the 4 years, you were like, you know what, I'm going to start throwing some extra on this? Or kind of walk us through the when and then how each month kind of looked. Were you still having a social life? What was going on?
Oh, okay. So in 2015, that's when I really decided to get serious about my debt. I had been going to the FinCon conference and just meeting other money bloggers who were actually debt-free or just building wealth. And I was like, maybe I can try to be debt-free as well. So it kind of started with hanging out with other people who were on the same mission. And then I decided to do a debt challenge with my audience. And that's kind of when I really started putting more money towards my debt because the minimum payment towards my debt was $300 a month. But with this debt challenge, it was whoever paid off the most amount of money in 11 weeks would win like $500. That's how
Well, hello.
And so you're seeing all these other people throwing like $1,200 towards their debt or like $1,500. And I'm like, wait a minute, I have to put more money towards my debt.
And were you paying the minimum before that started, or how was it looking?
Yeah, before 2015, I was just paying the minimum every month. Because I was like, I'm not really in a rush to pay this off. Like, who cares? It's debt. Like, you know, in 2015, I was like, what if I could be debt-free?
And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you bring up something interesting that I want to ask about. Did you ever think that you could be debt-free? Like, before you did this challenge, like, was that even real to you?
No, I didn't think about it really. I think until I started hanging out with other money bloggers and I was just like, oh, this is a thing. Like, people are actually living without debt.
And are there other people in your life who are debt free, or did people that you knew who weren't bloggers understand what you were trying to do? Or did you have people who, like, in my family, I have relatives who are very, very well to do, and I have them like both on both sides of the spectrum. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting because I've noticed, not with, even just with them, with my family, but just with people in general, there's the people who just can't ever imagine that they could live a life where they don't owe someone money.
Yeah.
And then there's the other people who are like, well, I leverage my debts. You know, some of them leverage their debts because it's mortgages or stuff like that, but they live a pretty debt-free life. Mm-hmm. And the mentalities are really, really different. And one of the things I realized on my debt-free journey was that I had to be very careful about who I'm around.
Yeah.
And initially I didn't realize how important that was until I started getting into the process and kind of changing my mindset. So I'm wondering for you, was that similar?
Yeah, I think that I was telling people what I was doing and I was kind of documenting my journey on my blog so people knew about my mission. Mm-hmm. But I don't really feel like I was getting any discouragement from anybody. It was just kind of like, oh, wow, that's what you're doing. And then as the balance started going down, it was just like, wow, like, you're really doing this. I can't believe it, you know? But when I had a bigger balance, it was kind of like, okay, yeah, right. You're going to be debt free. You're going to pay off all your student loan debt.
Why the skepticism? I think that's what I'm trying to get to. Like, why were you skeptical about that?
I think other people were kind of skeptical because, I don't know, you're just used to paying off your student loans debt, especially for like so many years. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was just kind of like a new concept for people.
You're around these other people, but what was the like, aha, I could really do this?
I think, yeah, like seeing other people doing it in the personal finance space and just imagining what I could do with the extra money if I didn't have to pay somebody else every month.
So during this, you kick this up a notch, you share this amazing challenge, which you definitely need to share at the end of the show as well. You lose your job.
Yeah.
Even though you have an exit plan and a strategy, how did that affect your debt repayment? And where were you in the process? Because that's $38,000. You've been kind of paying the minimum. Do you recall like how much you owed at that point in time?
So I got let go from my job like last January. So I had like $10,000 and like $98 left to pay off.
So you're let go of this job. You basically have how many clients? Because you're preparing to leave anyway. How many clients did you have? And what did you do to ramp up your income so that you could keep on paying on this debt?
Well, I didn't really have that many clients. I was kind of like winging it. Like, okay, hopefully I can freelance for a company. Because I felt like if I could freelance for a company, work there like maybe 20 hours a week like that, I could make money faster that way and still have my own clients on the side. Because I just knew I didn't really want to go back to a full-time 9-to-5. And somebody from my previous job sent me a message on LinkedIn and was just like, hey, we're looking for a freelancer. Is this something you'd be interested in? And
what?
I know. It's just crazy how it worked out.
What?
So in like May is when I started like freelancing there like 20 hours a week.
What was happening between, when did you lose the last job?
The end of January. So basically like February 1st.
So what happened between February and when you got this new gig, which is really geeking me out right now, honestly, the timing on that.
So from February, so I actually, the FinCon community, a lot of my clients come from the FinCon community, which is great. So I was doing like virtual assistant work. I was doing money coaching. I was doing design work as well. And
how did you get people to know that you had services that you were selling? Like, What did that look like to your potential clients? How did they know to find you?
I think it was just like word of mouth referrals. Like people would see my design work. I think even though I have a personal finance blog, like people still see my designs because I create my own graphics. So they're like,
she does a good job, everybody.
So I think people see my own graphics and like, oh, who does that for you? And then they need me to help them do theirs.
I'm wondering what it was like for you to negotiate your prices, and walk us through how that felt for you to have this skill and these services that you were selling, and it was really important for you to make the money, right? So you lose your job, you were you like, hey everybody, I just lost my job, I need like hook a sister up, okay? And then people start reaching out to you. What was it like for you to negotiate prices and let them know what you were worth?
I think that I knew that from my last job, how much that the company was making off of me and then how much I was actually getting. Ooh. So I think that I saw one day in one of the folders that I think they charged for my time like $120 an hour, but I was only getting paid like $20 an hour.
Oh, that's not all right. No, no.
Yeah. So I saw that and I was just like, wow, so I'm worth so much more. I could be charging more for my services. Yeah, I was just kind of like, once I knew that number, I feel like I upped my rates.
Was it scary for you to do that?
It was scary because in the beginning, like my rates are different now than they were.
I know they are.
Because I just feel like you have to get comfortable. You're like, okay, I've been doing this for a while at this price. Now it's time to raise my prices so that I just feel like that, like it's necessary. But it was a little scary in the beginning, like, will people actually pay this?
What did you find that people actually would?
I found that people, whatever price that you kind of put out there, that's what people are going to pay. So I have clients now that when I first started, like, I was at such a low price, but nobody's going to tell you that you have low pricing. Like, they're just going to pay you whatever you could tell them.
You know what's really funny about that? So this is the saddest story ever that I'm about to share. I'm still mad about it, but I'm glad it happened because it's like a lesson learned. So when I quit my job, I went to Australia for a couple of months and I was really burnt out, I was exhausted. And I didn't really have, like I had a vague plan when I returned from Australia for how I was going to work and all that kind of stuff. And one of the things I ended up doing was editing a digital book for a person who actually is in FinCon. I'm not going to say who it is. And they very wisely let me negotiate the stupidest rate. I can't even believe I negotiated this rate. It's the stupidest thing. I mean, by the end of that project, I probably was getting paid like 10 cents an hour, 10 cents an hour. And this person to this day is probably like, you're so dumb after that negotiation. Cause I just really didn't understand one, how much work I was doing, how to be assertive about what I wanted and the value of my time and my efforts. Okay. And I wonder, do you think you would have come to that same realization about your time and efforts if you hadn't seen that paper?
Yeah, that's a great question. Maybe not. Maybe I wouldn't have came to that conclusion. But then at the same time, when you go to other designers' websites, you can kind of see what they're charging. So at least I did that as well.
Okay, so you did some research. So people, if you're listening and you're not sure if you're getting paid right, start doing your research. And then I think the other thing is, did you start kind of detail, like writing down results? Or how was it that for a person who was nervous about paying your rates, how did you walk them through that conversation? Or were you like, you know what, if you're nervous, then you're not the ideal client for me, and I'm gonna keep going because I have to pay off my debt?
I think since a lot of my clients were just word of mouth and referrals, they already knew what they wanted, and so when I told them my price, it was just like, either we're gonna move forward or they're like, I'm gonna find somebody else that's on Fiverr or something. But like, that's fine.
What was life like during repayment? It was up and down, that kind of thing. But I want to talk about the day-to-day life. You're young, you're a millennial. What were you doing? Were you like, well, crap, this sucks, I'm going to stay in my house all day? Or were you out and about doing things? Like, what was life like for you? Because I think that a lot of people are very nervous about paying off debt because they perceive it also as if you're paying off debt, it's all or nothing. You're only going to be paying off debt. You're not going to be living your life. You're not going out. You're not doing shit. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yeah.
So what was your life like?
Well, at that time, since I had $10,000 left, basically last year I was paying like $1,000 a month towards my debt, but I was making more money than I was when I had my 9-to-5. So for me, I was still living my life. Like, I'm still buying wigs. I'm still buying makeup.
Wig life.
You know, so I didn't feel restricted. Uh-huh. I felt like since I had more money coming in.
Wait a minute now. Wait, let's roll back. You got fired. You were earning more.
Yeah, at that time, because, you know, got to remember, like, 20 hours a week, I was working, like, freelancing for a company. Uh-huh. And then I also had my other clients on the side.
So it's funny, this interview is running a little different than most of mine because I'm asking a lot of kind of harder pointed questions because you're not loose-lipped. So you're telling me, you know what I want to know? Because there are other people listening, and they're like, wait a minute. So you were very strategic, I think, about what you needed to do. And I'm wondering, were you fearful or freaked out, or what was it like for you looking at your month and being like, okay, this is my month. This is, and actually, can I be bold as to ask what you used to be paid? Not now, but before at the old job.
So at my old job, I was bringing in like $2,100 a month.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, well, shit. Okay.
Yeah. So,
now I see why that freed up time made you more money.
Yeah, exactly. But the good thing about not getting paid that much is that when you leave, you don't have to find that many clients to replace your income. It's like, okay, I only need $2,100 to make it when I was making in my last job.
This year, I know you're making more. How do you feel about just, what was it like that last day when you were like, you know what? Paying this off. This is the last day. Bye, Felicia. What was it like paying that final payment, looking at the pay portal and just being like, cha-ching?
It was very freeing. I was so happy to just test that final payment. But you know what? I thought I was done with the final payment. And then
the next week,
good thing I logged in the next week, they had charged me 15 cents.
That is so wrong on so many levels.
And I said, if I didn't log in, they'd be charging me extra money for this 15 cents.
Oh my God. So you just double checked.
I double checked.
And for anyone who asks, is it worth it to sacrifice in some of the ways that you had to and focus and that kind of thing? Is it worth it to pay off your debt? And if there's someone who is feeling a little overwhelmed by where they're at, what would you say to them?
I would say that you can't really look at it as like a sacrifice because you're not going to be paying off your debt forever, hopefully. I just thought about it like this is just something that I'm doing right now. And then once I'm free, I can spend my money on other things. So yeah, just one payment at a time and you reach your goal. And also it was kind of like breaking up your debt into smaller kind of payments. So if my whole balance was like $38,000, but like every debt is kind of broken up into smaller ones. There's like a $4,000 one, and there's a $7,000 one. So I wasn't thinking about the large number. I was focusing on the number that I was tackling at that moment. So I'd be like, okay, it's just $4,000 I have to get rid of right now.
That's a really good piece of advice. Just make it into smaller bite-sized pieces so you can actually just focus on the task at hand.
Yeah.
I wonder, kind of thinking here, last year when you were in that transition period mm-hmm. and you were like, you know what, paying $1,000 a month, like, were you still at home or had you moved out? How did that look?
Oh, no, I'm still at home.
That is smart. Save that money.
Yeah, I'm still here. Eventually, I will leave home. But
you know what? Actually, I want to talk about that. How do you feel about being at home and what is that like with your family? And I think that your family is not originally from the U.S. Am I correct? Am I crazy?
No, we're originally from the U.S., yeah.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought you guys were from the islands or for some random reason. That's completely... Okay. So how does your family feel about you living at home? I come from the tradition, like a lot of Black families, where you bring in relatives and you help them. Like, that's just mm-hmm. the thing you do. So is that just part of... It's just like, whatever. Like, we're helping Candace get on her feet and it's not a big deal. And there you go.
Yeah, no, it wasn't a big deal at all. I was just like, my mother welcomed me with open arms.
I'm sure she did. She's gonna be holding on to you real tight when you start talking about leaving too.
Yeah, so I always say that I don't think I would be able to be debt free as fast as I was if I didn't live at home.
And do you think that other people, like if other people are asking you about doing that, what would you say?
I would say definitely you should do it, because I feel like it's going to help you be able to reach your money goals faster. And I don't think people should be ashamed. I think that sometimes there's shame in saying that you live back at home. But I don't think, especially if you live in like a big city, like Boston's rent, oh my gosh, it's probably like $2,500, $2,000 a month.
Okay, yeah, that's expensive.
So imagine me at my last job, I was only making $2,100 and then rent is like $2,000. It's like, how am I going
to
live?
Would you ever move to a different city?
No, I would definitely move to another city. I do want to leave Boston eventually.
Sorry, that was kind of funny the way you said it. So I want to get into what you're doing now, some of the results of your debt repayment journey, and just what 2019, 2018, and 2019 will bring. So recently you were in Essence Magazine. I'm very excited about this for you. How did it feel? How does it feel to have people really acknowledge all of your hard work and your sacrifice and your focus? And what's life like now professionally and personally now that the debt's paid off? How do you feel each month as you're paying off, as you're paying your obligations, things like that? What, just kind of just talk about all the things.
All the things. Okay, so I was super excited to be featured in Essence and to share my story to more people. Because it just showed me that you never know who is listening to you. Even if you don't have hundreds of thousands of followers, you just need to focus on that one person that you're trying to reach, because that's what really matters. But it feels amazing not having to have this extra payment, even when I'm like doing my budget, when I'm paying my other bills, just not to have to log into an extra place to dish out money. For 2018, I'm just still focused on growing my business, freelancing with my design business, and as well as Young Yet Wise, growing my money coaching and my subscriptions. You know, it's just all about growth and elevation from now in 2019.
And what does your profession, like, what do you hope to be doing? As you're, to me, a creativepreneur. So what kinds of things are you trying to develop as a professional?
That is a great question.
I told you I'm all in your business.
I know. Now I'm trying to think, like, wow, that's a question I need to just ask myself at the end of each month. Like, what am I trying to develop? Yeah, I think I'm just trying to be able to continue to work for myself and, yeah, just continue to build a life on my terms.
What kind of work are you trying to do? Are you wanting to do the same types of things? Or are you looking into different types of projects? How does that look?
Well, I really do enjoy video. I do enjoy working with people one-on-one, maybe some more like group coaching interactions, maybe some more speaking engagements. Yeah, I don't mind. I also help helping other small businesses with their designs and graphics as well. So maybe one day, like, I'll have my own like co-working space. That's always been a vision of mine, to have like a co-working space where I can have my office for doing my own video work and coaching with clients. And on the other half is like, people can like rent out different spaces and teach different entrepreneur classes and design classes. So yeah, we'll see.
Speaking it into reality. because I'm like, I know that she's got some things brewing. I want to be the first to know. And I think that the thing that I'm curious about as well, because all I've done is just like pick your brain today, is when you're working with your clients, what's the number one issue that you seem to see over and over again? What's the thing that most people are struggling with?
I feel like the thing that many people are struggling with is not really even having a plan for their money. Like just living month to month and just swiping. But they don't have like categories for how much they're allowed to spend for each thing. So they're way over all the time. And then just living off of the credit cards.
Do you still credit card, or are you kind of like, no, that's not great? Or what's your view on them?
So I do have credit cards, and I just pay off the balance in full each month, because I feel like I'm not anti-debt. Mm-hmm. eventually I do want to have like rental properties. So I feel like that's the only debt that I would kind of want to have is paying off my credit cards in full and then like rental properties.
How do you help people create a plan? I know you're coaching, but what are some of the, what's the number one tip that you would want to share with the audience today?
I think writing it down. Yeah, just figuring out exactly where your money is going every month. Like how much are you actually giving yourself for fun money? How much money are you actually spending on alcohol? And actually just looking at your bank statements and your credit card statements, because people, you'd be shocked by how many people don't know exactly how much they're spending.
I'm going to actually raise my hand and be like, no, because I used to be that person actually. And it was painful. It was shocking actually to discover how much over my monthly budget I was, because I was supplementing my budget with my credit cards. Mm-hmm. And so that was a big problem.
Yeah.
And that's why it's just been a lot of like just paying all those off, because for a long time I lived a really inflated lifestyle. The weird thing about all of this is I'm on a cash budget now and I still have the same lifestyle, but paid.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome.
It's a very different experience. And I really wish I'd known about this, like that I could do the same thing for less, but I didn't. So there you go. So I'm learning the hard way so that other people can learn the easy way.
Yes. No, I think same here. 1 month when I actually did this exercise myself, because I'm like, you know, I'm telling people to do this, I need to do it. And I had found that I had spent like $500 or something in like 2 months on hair, like wigs, weave. Hair products. And I was just like, well, I'm spending a lot of money on hair. I need to tone it down.
You know what? Let's talk about wig life, because I understand why people love them. I love them. I actually lost a lot of hair. It's like starting, it's healthy-ish, but not happy. You know what I mean? And so it could be that I'm never going to, who knows? And one of the things is I totally understand why people love to have wigs and extensions and black, white, whatever. Like I understand why people do it. I think some people don't quite understand it. But for me, I love it. And for a long time I was buying like really expensive, like human hair and all this stuff. And then Sandy Smith actually got me like to understand that, hey, also because I live in a very white city. Okay. So I'm ordering stuff to come into town versus having like, little bodegas and stores around where I could just pop in. Like it's kind of a lot more work. So one day she's like, I was like, Sandy, your new wig looks amazing, you know, like I'm just gushing about it. She goes like, girl, I paid $15 for this. And then my new wig life was born. So kind of walk me through why you like wigs so much, what you used to pay on them, and now kind of where your head is at with that, and how you budget for those kinds of things.
Yep. So I love wigs because it's just like instant glam. That's what I like to call them. Like I wake up and I go, I know how it's going to look. I don't have to like twist my hair at nighttime. So I think I like wigs because of the convenience and it's really helped my hair grow. Like right now I have my natural hairs out. But I feel like wigs have definitely helped my hair grow faster. And but I think the most money that I've ever paid on a wig was like $100. And that was like a lot of money for me. At first it went from like weaves. Now weaves are like $300. And I was like, this is a lot. So let me scale back. So then it was like wigs, which was the most expensive, was $100. And now it's like, I can get a wig for like $25, $35, maybe in the $40, $50 range. But yeah, they last a long time too. Like you can get like even the synthetic ones, that could last you like 2 to 3 months maybe.
How many wigs would you say you kind of rotate through?
I feel like I used to have a new wig every month. Like every month I would have a new wig.
Yeah, but shoot, for $30, that's still reasonable compared to, like for some people, that's maybe one wig.
Yeah.
That's a really good price, actually.
It is. It's great. Especially if I don't have to pay for shipping. I'm just like in the store, pick it up. Like,
Stop rubbing that in, okay? No. So sad about that, but whatever.
Oh, man.
Working with people, and you're talking about what the budget will be, what their budget will be Are they nervous about you saying, hey, actually, we're going to have to cut this out of the budget, wigs or manicures? Or how do you kind of work through that part of the budgeting process?
I don't really like to feel like I'm restricting people. I feel like they tell me what their goals are in the beginning. And then it's like, okay, if you want to reach this goal, if this goal is more important, you have to do some kind of adjustment here. But I don't feel like I'm ever like, okay, you cannot get your nails done. Maybe it's just like, okay, maybe instead of every 2 weeks getting your nails done, what if you just got it done once a month? Like, and then we use mm-hmm. this extra money to put towards your debt or towards your savings. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't ever want to just like completely cut things out. And then maybe it's just budgeting in advance. So maybe it's like, okay, how many wigs do you think you're going to buy in the year? And then can we save monthly in a separate savings account just for your hair or beauty? So that we're putting that money aside.
Are there certain tools that you like to encourage people to use to help them save money towards their goals?
I used to have Digit, but then I broke up with Digit and
I'm about to do a whole podcast about that.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Yeah. I use Rise now. Rise.
I love Rise. I love Rise. Why did you break up with Digit? And you could share exactly what it is and what happened.
So I broke up with Digit because I couldn't actually see exactly how much money they were pulling out of my account every month. I would get a text message. I did enjoy getting text messages of how much money was in my account, but it was just random numbers based on their certain algorithms of how much money they would take out and put away. And at first it was free, and then it was like $5 a month. Yeah, I did some days miss Digit in their text messages, but I do like Rise because I can actually set a specific amount. And their interface looks so pretty too. That's another thing I love about them.
Isn't it funny how packaging does
it help? Matters. Yeah. It definitely matters.
So we're starting to wrap up the interview. We've talked about just the journey, some of the stuff, things that you've learned about yourself, budgeting, business. What are your future goals? You did talk about investing and things like that, but I think I want to talk more like this year, next year. Like what does it look like for you?
It's interesting. Even though I feel like for so long, my goal was just to get out of debt. And now that I'm out of debt, I'm like, okay, I do need to have the bigger goals. I think it's just to continue to make more money in my business. I'm also studying to get my CFP, which is super challenging. So I send prayers. You guys,
I'm sending them.
So I guess it's just studying. Yeah, I've been growing my business, doing more speaking engagements, maybe some TV appearances. That would be.
You would be so good at that.
Yeah. So TV, just using my platform to serve millions of people. Like that has always been the goal. So just allowing more people. Yeah.
And if there's one piece of advice you'd like to leave everyone with, what would it be?
Just that it's possible. That the life that you envision in your head, whether it's being debt-free or working for yourself, it won't be easy, but it is possible to get there.
And actually, I have another question, and this one's a little more personal, which is if you are talking to people of color, young men and women who are dealing with debt or being not paid enough, under-earning, what are some of the things that you would encourage and advise them to think about? Because honestly, in speaking with you and sharing your story, I think it would be foolish not to talk about that because really you inspire other people who look like you and me. And I know that it would have made a really big difference for me to have someone like you at that age when I was struggling with different things, inspiring me to think bigger. What would you say to other people of color who are like, crap, like I have all this debt, I have these dreams, what am I going to do?
Yeah, so I think if you're just going into the workforce, try to negotiate as high a salary as you can, because I feel like that's kind of a mistake that I made is when I entered into the workforce, I didn't negotiate at all. I was just happy and thankful for the opportunity. But I think that now you have to know your value and just know your worth and know that you're worth more money than instead of just being thankful. I mean, yes, you should be thankful for the opportunity, but you also have to know your worth and know what you're bringing to the table and that it's okay to ask for more.
And asking for more, is that being greedy?
No, I don't think it's being greedy. I just feel like at the lowest amount that you start at, then as you go out throughout the years, you don't know if you're actually guaranteed to get a raise, you know? So now you've just started off at like 38,000. I think for me, it's like I started out at 38,000. And then by the time I left, I was only at like 41,000. And they kept, every time it was always an excuse as to why I wasn't going to get more money. Or it was just like, oh, the company's having a freeze right now, so we have to freeze your salary. It's just like all these excuses, you know? So I feel like if I would have went in there negotiating and just not being afraid to lose that person or lose that opportunity, because there's always, if I lose something, I just think that something better is coming. So you have to not be in like a scarcity mindset. You have to just believe that it's possible for you to get more. And if one door closes, that just means that just wasn't the right door for you.
How can people connect with you after this interview?
You guys can find me at youngyetwise.com. And I'm also on Instagram at youngyetwise, with the E is a 3. So that's how you guys can connect. I know, I always feel weird.
I wasn't expecting that, actually. Because I've been, wait a minute now. You know what? Okay, I've been reading. Wait, I'm going to look here. I've been looking at your Instagram feed for how long and didn't know this?
Yeah, I know. It does sound kind of ghetto. Like, it's young, yeah, wise, but the E is a 3.
I will have links to all of your stuff in the show notes. And perfect. I just want to say thank you so much for letting me badger you through this interview. I was like, I'm going to get my answers if it kills her. Okay.
Thank you so much.
And I'm just so proud of you and so excited to see what the future has in store. And I look forward to sending more people to you so that they can participate in the Young Yet Wise Society. And definitely make sure to give me a link for that so that people can know how to join that as well.
Okay, awesome. Will do. Thank you so much for letting me share my story with your audience.